My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes. With me now, as always, is Fred, who looks like he just got finished with a round of electroshock therapy. How are you, sir?
Hey, buddy. Oh, boy. So I decided I'm going to change my haircut up a little bit. And so I'm growing my hair out because I do have good hair. That's like my one attribute that doesn't suck. And so I'm like growing it out a little bit so it could be long, but like I haven't got it styled. So it's just long, shitty hair, like down, not quite to my shoulders, but like it's curling up in the back. I've got like a mini, like a self-created mullet. It's a hot mess. It ain't looking good.
Fred, you look like a power forward who would have played with John Stockton in 1986.
Frankly, that sounds like goals. That just further convinces me that I'm on the right path.
Hey, look, one of the big things for me is I grew my hair out.
Yeah.
And it sucks for about a year. But once you get over that hump, holy crap, does it rock.
See, I don't really want it down to like my shoulders or anything, but I'm just trying to do a thing where it's like a little longer. And, then I can run my fingers through it and be like, ooh la la. And, you know, my wife will be like, God, why are you doing this? And that's just kind of where I am. So we'll see if it works out. It probably won't. There ain't much fixing this. You know, this whole package is just kind of what you're going to get, baby. But, you know, one could try to, you know, fix the window dressing, I guess. So how was the Senior Bowl, Mr. Football?
It was a lot of fun until I ate oysters and I got sick.
Okay, now you were down in Mobile, right? So that's like right near the Gulf, correct?
The restaurant I was at was less than 10 miles from the Gulf, yes.
Okay, so that does sound like a, yeah, let's rock some oysters area. But like, were they raw? Like, give me the details on what destroyed you. I'm sure you'll love that.
So they were raw oysters, and I like the company I work for, A to Z Sports, is based in Nashville. So when I told them that I'm pretty sure I got food poisoning from oysters, they were all laughing at me. Oh, Northern boy eating oysters. You can't handle it. I'm like, dog, I eat dozens of oysters up here all the time. That's normal for me. So the fact that I got sick off of them while in the Gulf really just sucked.
Yeah, that sounds like you got, like, suckered, you know, like, you went in expecting it to be nice and safe and a good time, and is not what you got, because food poisoning is the worst.
Oh, Fred, it was bad. I was, like, you know, food poisoning, you get massive diarrhea, and then at about midnight, so it started to kind of affect me at, like, 4:30, but because I had that really invasive appendectomy, I thought I would just had a lot of gas and I just needed to kind of, you know,
take care of that. Sure. Yeah.
kind of normal for me post-op, whatever.
Yeah. Fort McGee.
Yeah. one of the guys that I was staying with had some gas X, so I took a couple.
And sure, yeah, yeah.
Started to work. I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel better. And then I didn't. And then I started puking at like midnight.
Oh, boy.
It was bad. It was so bad that I was only at practice for an hour on Thursday.
Oh boy.
It's like 4.5 hours of the practice. And then I basically spent almost all day in bed. I had work responsibilities where I needed to like write articles, do videos. I did like none of that.
Yeah. So why?
No, everybody was great. They were understanding. I am so sorry. They're like, dude, it's not like you went and got hammered. I had one beer, just one beer. But I did upgrade both of my flights to first class because of that. Holy,
that is fair.
Crap, is first class great?
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, I'm sorry that all happened to you. I'm going to tell my food poisoning story real quick. If you're queasy about queasiness, you may want to skip ahead like a minute or so. I'm not going to like go into deep detail, but you know, so way back, like 15 years ago when, Nicole and I were dating, we went to a Mexican restaurant where she was for her advanced degree she was working on. And she was like, oh, this place is so great, you know, and like, it's Americanized, you know, Mexican. We're talking about, you know, Appalachia. It ain't exactly going to be, you know, the most authentic thing you're going to see. Right. So, you know, I eat there. I'm like, it's fine. You know, okay. Get back to her apartment. And, she's like, let's watch the movie Sleepy Hollow, which I have never finished in my life because of this. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, this ain't okay. So I get up to the bathroom and I'll just leave it at this. I vomited so hard that some of it bounced off the toilet and hit the ceiling of the bathroom. What? So, yeah, not joking. Yeah, not okay, joking. So
I need to make sure I got
it. I defied physics.
You shit so hard that you...
No. I barfed so hard. Wrong hole, sir.
Yeah.
So that was a bad time. Do not recommend that if anyone's looking for a... way to pass the time. Shockingly, this restaurant is no longer extant. So, you know. But at that point in time, for some reason, I forget why, I had been dropped off there. Dropped off at Nicole's place. And my mom was coming back to like pick me up, even though it was like 25. I think someone had a car issue, probably me. And she came with like two of my sisters and was like, okay, well, I understand you're like, you just threw up a whole lot and everything and you're like basically wanting to die, but we haven't ate yet, so we're gonna park outside the CC's Pizza and you're just gonna have to like lay in the car and smell third tier pizza the entire time while we, you know, go to town inside. It was a bad day. Didn't enjoy it.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Good right. Times. Woo! So, Super Bowl. It is the Friday before the Super Bowl Sunday. We got probably the least interesting Super Bowl matchup of the ones possible from the conference championships. We got the Eagles and we got the Chiefs. The Chiefs who keep pulling wins out of their collective asses. What do you expect for the Super Bowl? You excited for the game? Do you think it'll be a good one? How do you think it'll work out?
I think we're going to get a fantastic game. For A to Z Sports, we did a bunch of like predictions and stuff. I predict the Chiefs are going to win by 3, and Saquon Barkley is the second ever Super Bowl MVP that was not on the winning team. Because I think he's just going to be incredible, and he's going to end up earning it.
Yes. I'll be honest, that seems impossible in this day and age. I understand where you're coming from. I'm not saying like I wouldn't like to see it or whatever, but it just feels impossible in this day and age for a losing team to get an MVP award in any championship game or series. It just feels like that collectively that's been ruled out by the people who vote on it.
Yeah, I think it'll be tough, but I think it'll be a good football game. It's also one I really don't give a crap about watching.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't like the Eagles. I don't really enjoy watching the Chiefs. Like, watching this Patrick Mahomes offense play football is just boring to me. It kind of reminds me of the 2002 Raiders,
mm-hmm.
when Rich Gannon was MVP. Good football team. It bored me.
Not interesting.
I didn't want to watch him play.
Understood.
It's methodical. It's boring. It's meticulous. I respect it. It's Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid are great. I just don't care.
It
sucks.
The Chiefs are really relying on their defense this year, aren't they?
Yeah. This is the year that they have relied on their defense more than any other. So
yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, the offense is still performing well enough, but it's not up to a level that we've seen in past years. They are not letting Patrick Mahomes beat them by being Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And he's had to adjust. And one of the things I've learned over the course of time is when you watch quarterbacks coming out, it's great to have an alien.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an alien, you don't want to be an alien. That's a fallback card. You want to be just a good quarterback. And I think teams are forcing Patrick Mahomes to be a boring, really good quarterback, be meticulous, be detailed, and continue to do those things without a great receiving core. With Travis Kelce, who does not move.
He's in the decline phase. He's in the decline phase.
It's going to hit him really hard because he was never an elite level athlete. He was a very good athlete for his size and position, but he was never like this. That's an elite athlete. He was just a really good athlete that was just good at what he did. And he had an excellent sense of space, a sense of his surroundings. You know, quarterbacks can sense pressure. He can sense where a DB is and he knows where to sit.
Is it fair to like compare him to like a tight end version of Wes Welker?
I think he's better than that, but vibes wise, I kind of see what you mean.
That's what I'm kind of going for. Not vibes, not so much skill. Obviously, he's a more impactful tight end than Welker was a wide receiver, but
he just has an understanding of his surroundings, understanding of spatial awareness, and it's special.
Yeah.
You don't have that with most guys. Gronk didn't really have that. Like, and Gronk is widely considered by many the best tight end to ever live. Mm-hmm. So he has a special chemistry with Mahomes, but his athleticism is just not there anymore.
Yeah.
Like even like a year ago, 2 years ago, like 3 years ago, it feels like you're watching a really aging player. And that's not insulting. Travis Kelce's still very good. But he has to be really good at every little meticulous detail now. And he can't just rely on a little bit of athleticism to get him over the top. And that's where, when you see these guys decline, it's when you can really start to see a sharp decline at some point. Like, I think this Chiefs team is very good. I think they'll end up winning. But it's tough.
Yeah. As you know, and as listeners may remember, I am not much of a football fan anymore. I just, you know, you get to a certain age, and I guess I've hit it because I am old. But, you know, you can't follow as many sports as you used to, you know, it just because you got so much other stuff going on. But I still follow the NBA pretty closely. And I got to tell you, man, I'm not you're a decent NBA fan, right?
I started getting back into it, but no, not really. I'm a football fan. I'm a casual hockey and baseball.
But you follow the Wolves closely.
I've started to, but even so, like, I just, dog, I barely have the energy to watch AEW.
Fair enough. I gotta tell you, man, this, I'm still thinking about this Luka Doncic trade of even like almost a week after it's over.
I have something for you on the Luka trade.
Okay.
The Mavericks gave up more first round picks to get Luka than they got it back in return after five all NBA selections.
Yeah. Boy. So just, you know, doing Rich Krejci's work for him. He used to do the podcast over the over and back, and he brought it back for an episode with his co-host, whose name I've already forgotten. Sorry, but they
Jack John
something, Jake, yeah, sure,
something like that. I'm gonna pull it up because I was listening to it earlier.
Jejunum, call him Jejunum. But he introduced Jason.
I said every J name but the right one.
Yeah. But it's a great podcast. It genuinely is. I really do like it. I'm sad that they stopped doing it for a while. I would love to see it come back. But they were talking about the trade, and Jason said that he, you know, saw people calling it the worst trade ever, and he thought that was ridiculous. And yeah, I know they're NBA historians, but Peter, I consider myself something of a scientist as well. I've been following the league relatively closely, you know, off and on. There's a couple dry periods just because of circumstances, but still, since the late 90s. And as far as a singular trade, I think this has to be in the running for the worst trade. Now, Anthony Davis is still a great player. He's probably top 10, 15 in the league or something like that. Maybe a little, maybe 20. But like, the gulf between what Doncic can do, where he's like a top floor player in a league that is superstar dominated, and what Anthony Davis, who is a few years older, which really matters in the NBA, he's in his 30s, and like, players are being able to stick around longer and longer in the NBA, but still, like, 30 is a magical number where, you know, things start to decline traditionally. And he has a long history of injury issues too. I love him. I loved him ever since he played at UK, but he is, you know, he's a guy that is prone to missing a lot of time. The last couple of seasons have been better, but still. But for them to just, like, the thing, you know, the real nail in the coffin for this being, like, a defensible move to me is two things. One, where it came out that, like, maybe they talked with Milwaukee about Giannis. And that was it. They didn't, like, shop him up. They didn't shop Luka around the entire league. And two, the reporting that, like, initially the Lakers had, like, first-round picks and this Dylan Neck guy who's a good defensive player and all that and on the table, and they talked the Mavericks out of it is a bonkers. Like, it's just really one of the worst. Like, it just... It's taken a guy who should have got you a huge haul and self-selecting to whittle it way down just because you're worried that the wheels might fall off of him on things that you could address, because they're concerned about his weight, because he, you know, he's got a little of that Jokic, you know, build on him, just in terms of, like, you know, being a little fat, you know, a little not the traditional supercut basketball player.
Fred, I need to interrupt you for a second.
Yes.
Ryan Russillo said on the Bill Simmons pod, Luka could run up the court smoking cigarettes, and I'd still give him the Supermax.
Buddy, if this was the 80s, he would have done that.
Yeah.
You might they're probably, if he played in 1978, you might have seen him on the bench, like, just drinking a Coors.
Not Coors Light.
The champagne of yours. And, like, I would still be like, yeah, I'd fucking keep him on my team. Like, it is a bonkers trade. Like, in the morning when my wife woke up, like, my brain just activated. I was like, the Luka Doncic trade is crazy. She's like, what are you talking about? I don't care. Oh, man. So that move is just still, like, I'm still thinking about it, just like the bonkers aspect of it. I'd have to put it, let's say in an alternate universe in 2019 where AEW had just formed and they moved, like, Kenny Omega. They traded him to another wrestling org, like New Japan. Like, they had to do that to get Chris Jericho. Like, that's the best, you know, that's like not the best comparison, but it's good enough.
Kenny Omega for Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, well, someone that would really move the needle, but for, like, okay, Hiroshi Tanahashi, I think, maybe. Because, you know, like, 3 years later, Tana's done as a top-level wrestler. Yeah, but there's the overness isn't quite the same in the U.S., you know, so it's just kind of, I don't know, but it's along those lines. And it's just, if you're just not an NBA fan, like, it's just, it is a bad move. a really fascinating one. But we should probably actually talk about AEW some. What do you think?
No, this is more fun.
Probably. I mean, look, it's kind of fun to talk about the mess that is Grand Slam Australia.
All right. Get the people updated. Sure. This story is just nuts.
So this is happening on, it sounds like February 15th, and will be airing on the same day on tape delay. That's a little confusing, just because it seems like AEW's been confused about that. So initially it was announced for what's called Suncor Stadium, though I think it's really locally known as Link Park in Brisbane. That's a soccer stadium. And so clearly with the Grand Slam name and everything, they were clearly thinking about doing like a Arthur Ashe thing. The stadium seats like 52,500 or so. And it's just, you know, massive. Well, now today, you know, it's not like they just announced this, but in the like past couple months, they kind of quietly, but not that quietly, moved it over to the Brisbane Entertainment Center, which is a basketball arena with a capacity of 13,600. So ever so slightly, tongue-in-cheek, you know, they've been moved you know, a much smaller arena. Now they are looking at like 11 or 12,000, which is pretty good. You know, I mean, like I you know, I'm not gonna sneer at that, but also it's well below what they were clearly hoping for originally. And the real problem here is you know, it seemed like they wanted to do a pay-per-view. But they had to, you know, it's now kind of quietly a episode of Collision, not a pay-per-view. Also note that there is a weird space in the schedule where they didn't have a pay-per-view in January. You know, things that make you go, hmm.
Well, how much does that make you go, hmm, Fred? Because they've never had a pay-per-view in January. I don't know if they've ever had a pay-per-view in February.
Yes, but they've slowly been moving to, you know, more pay-per-views a year.
Sure, but even with their increase in pay-per-views, because they didn't actually increase the pay-per-view number in 23. 2022 was a big jump. You saw Wrestle Dream, World's End, All In.
Like, well, 2022 had 5, and then 2023 had 8, and last year had 9.
Sorry, I meant 2023 was the big jump year, not 2022. Yeah. I still think it's 24 for some reason, but we're not talking like they added a bunch of these pay-per-views like just for the 1 year. Like, the schedule feels relatively set at this point. I think the only pay-per-view they added last year was Dynasty. They've never ran one in January. I don't believe they've run one in February. If they have, it was a Revolution at the end of the month.
It was literally Revolution 2020 on the leap day.
Yeah.
So
it would have just been that. So you can barely count February as a pay-per-view month. It's the first week of March. That's
you would I
talking here.
Once they announced this, though, it had big pay-per-view vibes. You know, it was, you know, like in the initial press conference, if I'm not mistaken, Tony Khan's talking about how, you know, about how the difficulties of presenting it on pay-per-view from Australia to the U.S. You know, and you're not going to be talking about that if it was planned as a Collision the entire time. So, you know.
It did feel like that they were talking about it being a pay-per-view. But I will.
Yeah, they never announced it. They did not announce it as such.
I don't know if you should give them credit or critical. I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
They never explicitly said that it was a pay-per-view. They kept the ambiguity there.
They did, which worked out in their favor. But I also think that like lots of people were buying tickets initially, thinking they were getting a pay per view, and you know,
talking to people from Australia, doing it in Brisbane is an awful spot to do this show.
It's, you know, it's not like, you know, it's rather geographically isolated, is it not? I mean, comparable to like, as my brain goes blank, I can only think of Canberra, but that's not the one I want to mention.
Melbourne and Sydney.
Yes, yes. Melbourne and Sydney are relatively close to each other. Because if you've never really looked at like the population of Australia, it's basically Brisbane and Sydney in the southeast. Sydney and you just said it.
Melbourne.
My brain is dead. Melbourne in the southeast, Brisbane and kind of the northeast, and then I think it's Perth way over on the west coast, if I recall correctly. And then in the middle, it's just like kangaroos and emus that won two wars. Like nobody lives in the center of Australia, more or less. It is a very sparsely populated area.
Pretty much. Perth is on the far west coast. Brisbane is
kind of northeast.
Northeast, yeah. I thought Brisbane was going to be more on the west coast. Did you know if you want to drive from like Brisbane all the way over to Perth, it's like 26 hours?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge, and there's nothing. Is basically what my reading has indicated to me. Is it's just like desolate. We're not even talking like flyover country in the U.S. where people are like, oh, there's nothing in the Midwest. Like, obviously, there's large population centers even outside of Chicago in the Midwest. But like Australia is just nothing there. So and the real sloppy shop of it is that they originally announced on a graphic that it was going to air at like 8:30 or the normal collision time slot or something like that. And there's just a little thing on the night of the show that's called the NBA All-Star Weekend, which is one of the bigger rating draws for, you know, the whole Turner Network deal. And obviously they're not going to preempt that or move that for AEW Collision. So it's just been messy. Right now there's four matches announced for the card for their Australia debut. And I mean, it's a big show. Let's be clear. It's not like the biggest, but it is a relatively big show. They've got, I think the blow off, I kind of hope it is, Toni Storm versus Mariah May for the AEW Women's World Championship. You've got Kenny Omega making his AEW in-ring return with Will Ospreay in a tag match against Kyle Fletcher and Kodosuke Takeshita, which should rock. You've got Buddy Matthews challenging Kazuchika Okada, which had a nice angle on Collision, it looked like, to set that up. That could be really good, especially with Buddy being the hometown guy. And then the main event is going to be a Brisbane brawl with Jay White and Hope against the Death Riders of Mox and Claudio. And that match should be really good. But this has just been a total mess. And I think I have some really, you know, real concerns about AEW's organizational status backstage. And you know, there was a report a couple weeks ago in our interregnum, if you will, you know, where I put out the Great Pro Wrestling Primer 2025, where, you know, there was a report that like, oh, Tony Khan is done with football for the year, so he'll be able to American football, so he'll be more focused on AEW. And I'm like, maybe he should just be more focused on AEW, period, because this past year creatively has been really tough, and it's really concerning when the guy who's in charge is like, well, you know, I got to do got to take care of the Jag. You know, it's like, I think at some point he's really going to have to make a decision on his priorities, and I think he's really got to face facts. So that's kind of the take on Grand Slam Australia. I think the card will be good. I think that they really need to like announce four more matches. And Tony Khan loves slow dripping that, so we'll see if we get that info. But yeah,
there's, there is something to the slow drip, but they need to do a better job of not slow dripping everything.
Yeah. At this point in time, it should be a couple more than just four matches, but more fantastic AEW news. They were murdered by the Royal Rumble. Collision was. Now, I'm not terribly surprised. It was up against like also three men's basketball games, including Arkansas and Kentucky, which was the John Calipari return to Lexington. It was a huge game, I think. Now, granted, I am immersed here, so I may be overestimating just how big it was nationally, but at least regionally, like this was a huge, huge story because of the way he left Kentucky. As we get a run in from Odie, the Wonder Dog, on the Tyler side of things. But Collision only did 197,000 viewers and a 0.04 in the 18 to 49 demo, which is down. They're down 34.3% from last year's Rumble, the episode opposite the Rumble, I should say. They were 11th in the time slot. Brutal. Really not good. But you know, I mean, I don't think it really is. It's bad. Let's be clear. But I also don't think that.
I don't think it matters.
This is what is concerning me about the promotion right now.
No,
you know. I think there's just a lot of stuff going on that makes it really look like a sloppy shop. And you know, the Grand Slam Australia is the big one recently, but I just think that this company really is lacking internal structure, and it is hurting the on-screen product significantly. A couple brief notes from other news for AEW. Mina Shirakawa was heard on the February 2nd Stardom show. She's said to be out indefinitely, but I couldn't find a report as to what actually happened, so I couldn't like really guess as to how long indefinite is going to be. Hopefully she is okay and she returns soon. The contract of Maria Kanellis Bennett has expired. She tweeted about how she's not going to talk bad about the company and then tweeted some more about leaving. So I think she is not terribly happy, but also I think they're happy enough that Mike's there that she's not going to rock the boat that much is kind of the read I got on that. They announced Megan Bain signed and debuted her a couple weeks ago. If you remember, I think we talked about Megan Bain being signed a year ago. So they took their time debuting her. Again, I it's weird. That is weird to me to do that. Elijah, used to be known as Elias in the WWE, has apparently signed and is being attached to the Righteous, you know, Dutch and Vincent in Ring of Honor. The thing with Elias has always been like, you know, he gets over with the singing stuff or whatever, and then the bell rings and nobody cared because he just was not a particularly good worker. We'll see what happens.
Look, I got to say, this pairing with the Righteous rules and
could be good. I've long said that the Righteous have been under pushed. I'd like to see them featured more.
Push them.
You know, so yeah, they have long been underused. It is really sad that their high watermark in AEW was getting squashed by MJF solo. Tommy Billington separated his shoulder on the Jericho Cruise. Hopefully it is a minor one, and it will be not effective long term. And the Jericho Cruise also featured a Big Bill, or as I put here, Bill. Imagine that was his name. The reunion between Big Bill and Enzo Amore. I get why that'd be fun in that setting, although Enzo is a little sketch. I'll leave it at that.
Look, but I think it's perfect for the Cruise.
Yeah, I don't want him in AEW. Big Bill has advanced beyond needing Enzo. Big Bill is actually really charismatic and good talker and just does not need Enzo around anymore. He can stand on his own and
no, yeah. He doesn't.
Yeah, I think that we might see Big Bill get established as like a really good upper mid-carder. Just as a quick reminder, a few months ago there was talk that there was going to be this show called Shockwave for AEW, possibly on Fox, and also there's a possibility of a Ring of Honor TV deal right around the time they pivot what was it, True TV, to being more sports. And neither have panned out, and there really hasn't been any clear news about either. And so I don't know that they're dead or anything. I can't say that. You know, no one can really report that, but it ain't positive. I will say that much. I will say that it's not a good sign for either show actually occurring. So, we'll see if either ever actually happens, but I'm not holding my breath. That's what I'm going to leave it at. And just a little note, because it's fun, the Saito brothers in All Japan are going full 1980s, and I love it. They have released an album and a music video.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
It rolls, and yeah, I just love that little detail. I don't know that I'd really call them great wrestlers, but they are good at doing what they do, and they had a very nice year. So,
Who's a great wrestler, Fred?
Who's that?
Someone that's over.
Yeah, they are over.
And the Saito brothers are over as hell.
They are really over.
They're just throwbacks.
TV show. They are throwbacks.
I love how you mentioned the 80s. You didn't mean it from an in-ring perspective. You meant from the stuff you
Japan
do
outside the ring, yeah. When like Terry Funk had albums and Hulk Hogan did, but they work a little 80s-ish, you know.
It rules, man. The Saito brothers rule. Is June still the Triple Crown champion, or did he get beat?
I believe he is. Let me confirm that. Now that Davey Boy Smith match I heard was not good, but he came back and had a. Came back and had a better one, I understand. I don't know. I didn't just... Yes, he is still the champion. So
nice.
Segueing here to... let's do the FSM 50. That was announced while you were gone. Or while our show... We weren't doing them. I just had my special show. The FSM 50 was announced on the Voices of Wrestling. I am a proud voter in it. I really enjoyed doing it. It's an attempt to name the top 50 in-ring performers in pro wrestling in a calendar year. So for 2024, the top 10, real quickly, overall were Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson, Konosuke Takeshita. So see, AEW is just fine. Don't worry about it. Zack Sabre Jr., Sari, Yamato from Dragon Gate, Hechicero, Yuma Anzai from All Japan, Shingo Takagi, and Kyle Fletcher. Other AEW names on the list were Swerve Strickland at 12, Claudio Castagnoli at 17, scrolling on through, Pac at 22, Mark Briscoe at 29, Hangman Page at 33, and Darby Allin at 43 and the Young Bucks at 44. Tyler, any thoughts you want to share on the list?
Interesting that the tag team was together. Now,
it is something that the FSM does traditionally. So,
I don't think you can really separate Matthew Nicholas Jackson, where you could separate Cash Harwood and or Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler, because Dax does a lot of single stuff. The Jacksons don't. So, I do like that the Bucks were kind of grouped together. I think I would have probably, just trying to think canonically in my head, I would have argued Mark Briscoe higher than 29, maybe not much higher, like 23, like the early 20s, because I just think he's had a great year. I'd argue he had a better year than Claudio. But I think we're just splitting hairs at that point. Honestly, I have a lot of respect for the FSM 50. Well, until you told me you were a voter.
How dare you?
No, you watched, you put in so much work to make sure you get it right, and I respect the hell out of that. I should not be voting in something like that because I don't watch nearly enough. And I think that's a good thing. It like lists like this should be held to an elite standard where it's people who put in that kind of time. And I may have little disagreements like, oh, I think this guy probably should have been there instead of here, but nothing egregious. Like, I did find it interesting. David Finley didn't make the list, but it is only 50. There are a lot of really talented workers. He just had such a good year. And
I thought he had a great second half of the year. It's the first half that killed it for me. I had him 52nd. So even with like where I thought he kind of disappeared for a while, I nearly had him on there on my list. But, you know, I understand why people wanted him on. I see it. He was one of my last cuts. He's and if he doesn't jump to WWE this year, I think he'll make it for 2025.
I, for New Japan's sake, I hope he doesn't, but I also don't think I want him as IWGP champion, which I feel might end up happening. I think he's the kind of guy that's a really good, like, mid-tier belt champ. Like, I thought he did a great job with the global title. I think he's done a great job elevating guys like Yotsuji. I'm really working with him, but he's just not up at that next level for me. So maybe it is better if he goes to the Fed. They will do nothing with him. They will do absolutely nothing with David Finley. He has an awful look for what that company wants.
But he is second generation, or third, actually. Or is it fourth? God, he's seventh generation. And when he goes to the WWE as the 28th generation superstar, you know, they might push him just because they love pushing, legacy acts like that.
Well, he's for sure going to have a shillelagh and his gear is going to be green.
Oh, good. Maybe they'll bring back
Hornswoggle. I'm David Finley, and I love to fight.
Yeah. Well, they won't call him David Finley, though. He'll have to be NXT-ified, so it'll be like...
Well, no, you said he's X-Generation. He'll keep his name.
No, Braun Breaker. No, I mean, they don't do that.
Well, that's different, though. That's because Rick Steiner wouldn't let them use the Steiner trademark.
Brian Pillman Jr., well, is Lexus King.
That I honestly think the Brian Pillman Jr. thing is because he doesn't want to go by Brian Pillman anymore. I believe that. I mean, they let AJ Styles keep his name.
That was years ago at this point. I mean, they, you know, in a different situation.
Yeah. I think they're way more apt to let these guys continue using their name. And if Randy Orton would have come in the same spot David Finley's, everything the same, just Randy Orton. They'd let Randy keep his name. His dad's Cowboy Bob.
I'm dubious, but, you know, it's kind of a weird hypothetical we're arguing here.
Yeah, that's also true.
That's the FSM 50. You can check out the list. I'm also doing a diary as I watch through my stuff this year. And you can check that out if you are interested on Voices of Wrestling. Finally, the Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year list came out. Top 10 featured 7 AEW matches. Once again, the company is fine. Don't worry about it. Will Ospreay defeating Bryan Danielson on April 21st was the top vote recipient, finishing with 1,411 points. Second went to the Sting retirement match on March 3rd in Greensboro. The rest of the top 10 was Bryan Danielson versus Swerve Strickland in London. Will Ospreay against Konosuke Takeshita on that Greensboro show. Revolution. Bryan Danielson against Zack Sabre in February 11th for New Japan. Bryan Danielson against Kazuchika Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. And then their Okada against Ospreay for the Continental Classic Final. Swerve Strickland against Will Ospreay on June 30th, CM Punk against Drew McIntyre in Hell in the Cell, and the Hangman Page against Swerve Strickland on September 7th. There are a total of there are a lot of AEW matches in the top 10. I'm trying to count them real quick. 14, 16. It looks like there were 25, actually. So a quarter of the top 100 were AEW matches. So once again, AEW's problem in 2024, not match quality.
Fred, do you want to talk about your top 10?
Oh, boy, yeah. Do you want to talk about yours?
Yeah, I'll go first. Let's
do it. Okay, sure. Go ahead.
I will say my top three matches were all on the same show, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
I'll start at 10. My 10th match was from March 29th. It's Team CMLL versus Team Blackpool Combat Club and Matt Sydal. Sometimes, like I wrote in my blurb, I think you get these, like AEW, we talk about it. They're a flawed company. The best part about AEW has been allowing their wrestlers to go out and wrestle in other companies. And Bryan Danielson, back-to-back weeks selling out Arena Mexico, is so fucking cool that we get to see that. And Danielson going to the Tokyo Dome. Moxley doing both of those things. Claudio going back to CML a couple times. It just rules. You get special environments because companies are willing to work together. You get these kind of special matches. Then we got to see Blue Panther. Danielson, Blue Panther almost made my list. Blue Panther 63.
Yeah.
Like, just awesome. To me, that's the best part about AEW is the ability to have matches like this. My 9th match was February 11th. Bullet Club War Dogs versus United Empire, a cage match, Will Ospreay's final match. This, to me, was the beginning of that Finley ascent. They did such a good job with that cage match, all parties involved. Even Francesco Akira, who talked in the pre-match promos, he didn't want to wrestle. Then he comes out and basically cuts himself open and just bleeds buckets and starts just trying to beat ass. That's one of the better cage matches I've ever seen. And it was such a uniquely different type of cage match because it's in New Japan, how they had it set up. It was almost like a Hell in a Cell style. Like, because of how the cage was built, I kind of like
it.
8 was Will Ospreay versus Pac from All Out. I gave that 5 stars. 7, Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher from World's End. I thought that match was just absolutely spectacular.
I thought that was the better of the two matches. I was surprised.
I didn't. I'll explain why in a minute. My 6, I have zero memories of this match, but I remembered watching in real time and think this is the best John Moxley Shingo Takagi match you could ever think of. And it was great from Battle in the Valley, January 13th. 5 is Kyle Fletcher, Will Ospreay from Full Gear. I thought that was a star making performance. And
it was really good.
It wasn't a carry job. Fletcher owned it. Fletcher looked like, I thought he looked better than Will Ospreay in that match. And that is incredibly high praise because I thought Ospreay was borderline flawless. Like you couldn't have asked for them to do anything better for that spot. And I think they may have a match of the year in them sometime down the line. Now, AEW Revolution cleared the top 3 spots, Fred. 3, Eddie Kingston defeating Bryan Danielson. 2, Darby Allin and Sting defeat the Young Bucks. And 1, Will Ospreay defeating Konosuke Takeshita. Amazing. Oh, I don't even think I said 4. Will Ospreay, Bryan Danielson from Dynasty.
That was good.
I was honestly surprised Swerve didn't make it into my finals, but he had a lot of 4¾ matches. He didn't get 5. And I had 9 5-star matches this year.
Yeah, Ospreay and Danielson both had great years. My top 10, I didn't do write-ups because I was lazy. But 10, Pac versus Ospreay from All Out. 9, Fletcher and Ospreay from World's End. 8, I really love the Yoda Tsuji Zack Sabre Jr. G1 match from August. 7 was Kingston and Danielson from Revolution. 6 was Takeshita versus Ricochet versus Ospreay on what was the October pay-per-view? I'm blanking.
Wrestle Dream.
Yes. I thought that was one of the best, maybe the best three-way I've ever seen. 5 from Noah, Masakita Miya and Tomohiro Ishii just trading bombs on each other. Number four was Nane Takahashi against Sari on December 13th. I want to say, I have the list in front of me. Why don't I just scroll up and look at it?
Is that the draw?
That is, it's not a draw. It's a miracle. It was a Marigold match, and it was a ref stoppage where Sari won. But it was really great, actually. Number three for me was Sting Bye Bye with Darby against the Bucks. Once again, if you think the Bucks aren't a great all-time, maybe the best tag team ever, get back to me after rewatching what they did in that match. Number two, Ospreay against Takeshita from Revolution. And then number one would be Dynasty Danielson versus Ospreay, which I thought was just like a once-in-a-lifetime level match. So I'm generally happy with the results. I thought like Punk and McIntyre was way overrated, but it's also the match that like WWE hardcores are going to circle around. And like, I gave it 4.75 stars. I thought it was really good. I think it's awesome as hell to see like Damus and Mad Dog Connolly from that WrestleMania week show up here. And you got a lot of really cool ones. I never got around to watching the Oku versus Ospreay Rev Pro match from last February, but it got on there. Cody Rhodes against Roman Reigns, because finishing the story, disagree, but hey. Just some really cool stuff on here. I mean, Statlander and Willow from September 7th from All Out got 23rd. So, that's cool.
Willow will get a match in the top 10 at some point. That's my hot take.
I think she could. I worry because, she has not been anointed like one of the top stars in AEW yet. And so she kind of, she for the last 4 months of the year or so, she largely disappeared. So, but that's the Voices of Wrestling top matches of the year poll. And we're recording this after what has been a little rare recently. A really good 8 out of 10 level Dynamite, because I've thought the show has generally been kind of meh. And they put a good one together. I am definitely not going to call it a return to form, because it kind of was, but I'm not saying that they fixed the company or anything, because there's a lot of issues going on right now. But if we can get a few months of like this kind of AEW back, then the vibes will be good again. But we're a little bit away from that, so. I thought there were several great matches on this. I really liked, I thought Swerve and Ricochet was a really strong main event. And I thought that the tag between Buddy and Brody against Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher was really strong. And I liked Ospreay and Davis too. I gave that 3.75 stars. I thought it was a little short of being like a real notebook match, but if it was going to get there, then I thought... I don't think it was too far off. I think Ospreay is in a really great position right now, and Omega too. And frankly, if it was me, I would have already pulled the emergency brake on this whole Death Riders thing, and got the title off them, because that storyline is not working. This whole they've just completely lost track of what they wanted to do with it, I feel like, and what they've got is just another, generic heel group that is very scary. So be nice to fix that. But...
You know what? There is one thing that I'm really excited about with AEW right now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it the Hounds from Hell?
Yes.
The reformated House of Black?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. They're
awesome.
Re-energized, reinvigorated. I think this is finally time to pull the trigger on a Brody King push. Let's go. And you know what? Screw the trios thing with these guys. Just let them be a badass tag team. You've got the hot tag in Buddy Matthews. You've got the big hoss who can move, who works great with small guys, big guys. Look, I know there's the whole running bit about we should get Sheamus in a G1, and I think having Sheamus in a G1 would kind of rule. I still think having him in a G1 would rule, but it'll never happen. The new guy is Brody King. Get him in a G1. And just let him be Brody King. Because he probably would have been, like, what, 3-4 years ago if the pandemic doesn't happen?
Yeah, he would have been in New Japan, but that it fell apart because of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like, I like that these guys are finally getting the shine that they deserve. They've done a great job. They're doing well with their push. And just keep pushing forward. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah. I also really like most of the angles on the show. I thought there were several good promos. I liked the MJF thing after I think they really overpushed Jeff Jarrett over the last month or two. But like, I get what they wanted to do. I just thought that he was overextended. But I like the Dustin segment too. So if it's just MJF kind of feuding with the old guys for a little bit before moving him back up the card, you know, I'd be fine with that. And yeah, I like the show. I like this. I thought the show was really good. I know there's people that really like it. I'm just kind of down on Mariah May, Toni Storm, that whole storyline. Like the angle, I think a week ago now, where Mariah beats down Toni, but then Tony's like, "Oh, this was my plan all along. I never had amnesia." It's just like, boy, imagine if we did a good version of this.
Look, I will say, the crowd did respond pretty well to Toni Storm and the Mariah May gear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that if they had done more of that and less of this this kind of silly stuff, like the amnesia thing, I was really down on that. I thought it was really dumb. I saw it with Mick Foley in 1993, and Mick Foley's like one of my absolute all-time favorite wrestlers, and it sucked then. So, like, why am I going to like it here? You know? So, yeah, just very... But, I mean, I thought that the stuff on Dynamite wasn't great, but I thought it was decent, and I thought that they at least got it back on track a little bit. So, yeah.
So, let's end the show like this. I don't know if you saw it, but apparently... Dave LaGreca on Busted Open. I want your take on this.
Oh, God. I don't know.
You already know where this is going.
I kind of do, in that I know that he said something dumb.
He always says something dumb.
Yeah, that's just like a day ending and why. That's their whole gimmick at this point.
he talked about how like AEW having great matches is a bunch of bullshit. Nobody cares. And talked about how the Raw after the Royal Rumble, Jey Uso had the crowd in the palm of his hand because with the yeet stuff. And I'm just like, do these people even like wrestling? No.
They don't.
No.
I mean, WWE doesn't want to be wrestling. You know, the WWE stands pretend that, like, they don't care about the actual wrestling at all. It's just not what I'm interested in as far as a pro wrestling product at all. And I just think, you know, it's really unfortunate. There is still like a standard of how good someone has to be in the ring in WWE. I'm pretty sure Jey Uso may not hit that. considering what the Uso v Uso match was at Mania last year, and like him having pretty much the most boring Gunter matches of his, you know, like actual run as a top guy over the past decade, consider the ground that covers, and like, you know, just how, you know, bad that is to say. But you know,
I just hate idiots.
Well, I got bad news for you about wrestling media at large.
Oh, do you want to talk about wrestling media before we go?
Those
mindless, feckless cowards.
that wouldn't ask about Janelle Grand at the WWE news conference after the Rumble?
I'll say this. Kudos to WWE for creating a press box of spineless, feckless cowards. Brilliant work. That, like, their PR team should get awards for how good they are at their jobs. With that being said, the amount of people who are parading around and celebrating, well,
bragging about it,
and then taking victory laps saying "bye haters" is gross. Gross incompetence. Sorry. I'm so mad I can't even get the words right. It's embarrassing, Fred. I am a journalist by trade. All these people like, well, why would you ask him questions just because he had an office next to him? Well, that's why you ask the question. He's also an executive within the company, and he's public-facing. So you ask the executive the public-facing questions. Even if you don't get an answer, non-answers are often answers, and you have to ask the question even if you know what the answer is going to be, because you never know what you're going to get. And all these people that go in there for their content. Look, I'm going to be honest. If you have content creator in your profile, I don't respect you. You are, yeah. No. Don't call yourself a content creator. What are you? Are you a YouTuber? Because let me tell you, these reaction faces of like all these Royal Rumble spots, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to what we do.
It's really sad. I just think that it's a real fuck up of like priorities, and I mean, it's just extremely sad to me to do that, you know, when it comes to something this important. You know, we're talking about someone that is alleging like ridiculously heinous crimes, it's very sad. You know, I mean, we're not even talking about like criticizing, you know, WWE's on-screen product or anything. We're talking about like a real moral situation, and you know, this should appall people, the accusations here. And you know, they are accusations, and understand that, but you can also, like, you know, if someone has the track record that Vince McMahon does, then I think it's fair to have some concerns, you know, and to say the least. And, you know, to go to one of these press conferences and be happy about the fact that you're not asking about that, because you just want to do fluff, you want to do PR for the company that they aren't paying you to do. Like, I don't know how you can do that and not, like, and still look in the mirror, you know, and still have pride. Like, I'm not a journalist by trade, but I just, you know, I care a lot about journalism. I read a lot of news, and I considered becoming a journalist and all that. I just don't know how you can get up in the morning and be okay with yourself when you do that. But I mean, there's been a lot of that, you know, I think nationally on all levels. So
it's bad, Fred. It's bad. And we can criticize WWE till they're blue in the face, but the one thing they've done really well is PR. Their PR team's great. It's fantastic.
I don't think it needs to be that good. Frankly, I don't think that.
No, but it's a great asset to have.
I mean, it's working well for them. Let's be clear. But I think it's also very likely that they're just like competent at their job. And that means that within wrestling that they're like, they seem like that they're, you know, the guy from Mad Men or whatever, you know, like the equivalent. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anything else, my friend?
No, that's it for me. I hope everyone's doing well. We will be back next week. I don't think we will be back the week after because we're both going to be traveling. But after that, I hope that we'll be able to just kind of stick to the normal schedule for the most part.
Yeah, I'm going to Mexico. I'm excited about that.
Fred, I'm going to Indiana. Equally exciting.
I haven't had a vacation since December of 2017. And by vacation, I mean no responsibilities. I'm not traveling to go do something. I'm traveling to go jack squat. I'm going to Mexico, and I can't wait.
I hope you have a great time, and but we'll talk before that. So yeah, we'll save that. Hope you all are doing well, and I will plug. We released it on this on the feed for Good, the Bad, and the Hunky. But I did, I mentioned at the start of the episode, I am very proud of what I did with the wrestling primer. So what I did, if you didn't listen to it, if you saw it and were like, I'm not listening to a 5-hour podcast, fair. But I would ask you to reconsider because I think it's basically the best thing I've done in pro wrestling in my writing and all that stuff about it. So basically I got people covering I think it was like 14 different promotions outside of AEW, and I got them to preview what they thought those promotions 2025 would look like. So I got Ian Hamilton, Kelly Harris, Paul Vosch, and Gerard DiTrolio, Case Lowe, Cubs fan, Mike Gilbert, Jeff Hawkins, and Warren Hayes. And we talked about, just to go in the reverse order way, I just did it, New Japan, WWE, TNA, CMLL, Triple L, Dragon Gate, All Japan, Noah, DDT, Stardom, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Rev Pro, and WXW. So I think virtually every major promotion, like the biggest ones we didn't get to were Gleet, comedy option, and like Deadlock Pro. We didn't really get into, or GCW, we didn't really get into the US Indies. But other than that, I think we covered everything that you could possibly want. And I'm very proud of it. So if you haven't listened to it, I would appreciate it if you checked it out. But I hope anyone who listened to it did enjoy it, and maybe it got you to watch some new wrestling this year.
I will second that. I listened to about 3 hours of it on the plane, Fred. It was very good. And well, you know it's good because I had nothing to do with it.
And you know it's good because it barely involved me. So
with that said, go listen to Wrestling Primer. Give us a 5-star review. I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Thank you very much for listening.
Y'all take care. Have a great one.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.